Welcome back, listeners. I am so happy to have you here with me today. If you're new, welcome to the Psyche Behind the Physique. I'm your host, Maddie Michelson, IFBB Bikini Pro and founder of the Empowered Coaching Collective. Today, I am back with my awesome friend and Empowered Collective's assistant coach, Alexa Soter. Alexa, thank you for joining us this evening and for taking part in such a special episode.
Thank you for having me again. I'm so excited to share my story of regaining my cycle and how it has transformed how I see my body and my health and all the things in between and how it's affected both of us. So I cannot wait.
Yeah. Here we go. Well, many of you guys may or may not know, I have actually suffered for years with amenorrhea. If you don't know what amenorrhea is the medical term for the absence of menstruation. It's not a condition in and of itself, but it is rather a symptom of an underlying issue. Women who have amenorrhea, they may not have their menstrual cycle for several months or even longer. And this can ultimately create disruptions in hormonal, metabolic, or even reproductive health. So, Alexa, could you share how you felt physically and maybe emotionally when your cycle was missing? And maybe talk about if for you it impacted more than just your reproductive health.
Yeah, so I guess beyond just the absence of actual bleeding, I physically and emotionally felt incredibly stressed out. Like my body was exhausted, overextended, and just tired. It felt like it no longer wanted to function properly, and this is exactly why my body stopped producing a regular bleed. And aside from like the obvious effects of my reproductive health, it took a toll on me mentally a lot. I felt panicked as if I was causing infertility, and stress and agitation was just at an all-time high. I mean, I generally always prefer to remain as healthy as possible through all stages, hence why our approach to my prep was a more sustainable and less damaging route. However, when I experienced the loss of my period, something that has only happened to me years ago when I experienced harsh symptoms of my PCOS, I did feel like my health was sort of declining and my stress was increasing and my emotions were spiraling. And I was set on regaining my cycle post-show and return to a place where my body was happy, which is can sometimes be determined with the return of our cycle.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there when you were talking about just how you felt, that you were kind of working, your body was working against you. It was almost like an out of body thing. I think as females, we don't even realize really what we have until we don't have it anymore. And it's like when you don't have it, I mean, I certainly felt this way. I was like envious of my girlfriends that did. Meanwhile, they're sitting there complaining.
No, me
But you also kind of feel like what am I doing wrong? Like, why isn't my body working with me? And we'll talk about this as we get going in another, section of our podcast today, but it almost helps you to identify as a female.
Yeah, that was a major part of when I was working to regain my cycle, or what I noticed when I didn't have one, was I lacked this sort of confidence. And I think us women, we don't really realize how prideful we are of our period and how empowering it can be, like how, an experience. And many see it as like a burden until, like you said, until you lose it. And then you won't know if it's actually a major driver in us finding a sense of empowerment and like womanhood. And I think this paired with the like emotional toll and stress levels increasing, I also did experience a decrease in my libido. And I literally mean it. I know I communicated this too often. I really just literally had no desire to do anything. And I think that can sometimes be really impactful, especially if you have a partner like I do.
For
And
sure.
it impacted my self-confidence because I didn't really want to do anything unless you're in a really strong relationship with your partner, like I am, thankfully. It can cause tension in your relationship, and that lack of confidence can also bleed into your partner as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, kind of segueing into, the flip side of this, once you started regaining a cycle, beyond just the bleed itself, and I remember the text and the pictures and the excitement, that we both celebrated together when we got that. But beside that, how did you feel in terms of your energy, your mood, your connection to yourself, your connection to your partner once those things returned?
It was oddly groundbreaking because I know, like, it sounds so weird to say it was groundbreaking to have my cycle back, but I'm not even kidding you. When I got it back, I was literally, I've never been happy in my life to have my period. And I remember I ran over to Marco, my boyfriend, and I was like, oh my God, I got my cycle back. Like, I'm healthy. This is so good. And it's funny too, because, like, maybe TMI, I don't know. But like several days after, I felt so confident, and my lib I felt good, and we were like doing things, and it felt better, and I felt better about myself. And I definitely think that that stress, whether it was because of my lack of period or just because I was like freaking myself out, kind of psyching myself out because I didn't have one, it kind of just like fizzled away. And I felt this sense of like, ah, like I'm a woman again, like oddly enough. But yeah, it
For
was really
sure.
more important than just the bleed, like emotions, stress, everything I felt like kind of balanced out once I did get it back. And it's been like a month now. And it's so weird how you can really truly feel that change in your health.
Yeah, I can definitely like feel your excitement even now
Yeah.
through the other side of the screen.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, like, including me, like, you've coached a lot of women through this t issue. How would you explain to them that a regular cycle is more than just fertility? Like, what is the bigger picture you want them to understand?
I think first and foremost, one of the reasons why I actually tiptoed around having this call in the first place is because there's so much information to cover that I
Yeah.
don't want to only disclose like what supplements to take, right? Or like the things, because it really is, you need to know the terminology, you need to understand some of the science behind it. So for a lack of better words, I think we first have to start with just a little bit of terminology so people can understand that we're not necessarily talking about conditions that aren't self-provoked per se.
Right.
We've got primary amenorrhea, which is the absence of menstruation by the age of 15 in girls who have not yet started their period, or by 13, if they've not shown other signs of puberty like breast development. Usually brought on by genetic conditions, structural abnormalities, or even endocrine disorders. Secondary amenorrhea is the absence of menstruation for 3 consecutive months or more in women who have previously had a regular cycle, or for 6 months in women with irregular cycles. And this is the type that we're talking about today. And secondary amenorrhea really has, I guess you could say, 5 different causes. Cause number one is hypothalamic amenorrhea. This is usually the type that we're talking about with PrEP or chronic dieters or chronic overexercisers. It's caused by stress, low energy availability, which basically means too much exercise, too little eating, significant weight loss, leading to suppression of reproductive hormones. PCOS is another leading cause of amenorrhea. Usually caught, we're seeing irregular cycles, skip cycles. Third, I'd probably say is thyroid dysfunction. Both sides of that spectrum, hypothyroid can both cause amenorrhea or disrupt the normal pattern of the menstrual cycle. Prolactinoma, which is a benign tumor on the pituitary gland, produces excess prolactin, which suppresses ovulation. And then obviously pregnancy or breastfeeding, right? It's common physiological causes of secondary amenorrhea. But the whole reason or the whole thing that really triggered this particular podcast for me was because I've been in the gym lately and I've ran into a few girls now who are far younger than me dealing with amenorrhea. I have friends who are likely and never likely would be bodybuilders, but instead are into running, Pilates, or even hot yoga, and they don't even have regular cycles. And the unfortunate nature of amenorrhea in and of itself is if you go to an OBGYN to discuss your loss of a cycle, They tell you you just need birth control.
That was me.
And yeah, and here's why. I've said this once and I'll say it again. Those doctors, those medical practitioners' job is to keep you from dying. What birth control or a progesterone push does is it forces the uterine lining to shed, promoting a bleed, so the chances of developing intrauterine cancers is lessened. It doesn't magically create a cycle for you. So I share this with you to say that today we're going to be discussing why it's so important to have a cycle, aside from the general reasons your doctor may tell you that you want one. And we're going to talk about mental and medical interventions necessary to regain it. You know, for years, I personally had minimized the importance of a cycle, and I didn't really care to get it back. After all, not having one, you know, this is before diva cups and menstrual cups became a thing. Periods costed us an extra 20 to $30 a month. I mean, it was like an extra added expense, and I was so wrong. So, you know, before we even get into interventions, I think it's really, really important here. I know I haven't even gotten a chance to answer your question yet, but it's really important that people know why it is so beyond necessary to have a cycle that supersedes simply just bleeding. So, I think what we could first discuss here is, you know, the physical health benefits of having a cycle beyond fertility. First and foremost, hormonal balance impacts our bone health. You know, estrogen plays a very critical role in bone density. This is why, as women tend to age and go through menopause, our concern is their loss of bone density and them actually fracturing things and breaking. So during your cycle, estrogen levels peak, promoting calcium absorption, inhibiting bone reabsorption, which is breakdown. And without regular cycling, low estrogen levels create a risk for osteoporosis. I heard this time and time again when I had an eating disorder. Secondarily, hormonal balance in supports cardiovascular health. Right? We all know, or maybe we don't, estrogen helps maintain healthy cholesterol levels. It increases the good cholesterol and it decreases the bad cholesterol. It improves your blood vessel function, it reduces your inflammation, it protects the heart from damage. And so it directly impacts our heart health. And then it also ensures thyroid health and metabolism stability. Thyroid hormones and reproductive hormones are like boyfriend and girlfriend. And regular cycles tells us that your estrogen and your progesterone levels are balanced, which prevents over or underproduction of thyroid hormone. And this balance is what supports a stable metabolism, energy levels, and your overall metabolism. So, or your metabolic health, right? So, Alexa, as we kind of segue here, beyond the physical realm, you actually might be able to speak on some of the mental and emotional benefits. So, what are some of the things that you've learned since regaining a cycle about how hormones can really shed light on how crappy you feel without adequate levels of them? I think we can all argue that having a regular cycle makes us feel more female, more woman-like.
Yeah, I think regaining a cycle for me has been really transformative, both physically and emotionally. It was like I finally got this part of me back that I had forgotten about or that I previously neglected and didn't really see the value in. And I think regular cycles is essential in our mood because that was also something I noticed. It was one of the more striking changes was my stability and my mood once I got my cycle back. And estrogen directly affects serotonin, which is the neurotransmitter that is responsible for stabilizing your mood, your appetite, and your sleep. So balanced estrogen levels during a regular cycle ensure an adequate serotonin production. And this helps to reduce these mood swings, anxiety, and depression that you may feel with amenorrhea, which I felt. And without these adequate levels, really, you'll have anxiety and irritability, and your hormones have an incredible effect on your mental state. And I think without your cycle, you may just move through life assuming that low energy and irritability is normal, or it's just stress or overtraining. But in reality, your body is internally fighting for this balance. And in terms of femininity and empowerment and how that impacted me is it brought this unexpected sense of empowerment and femininity for me. And I think when hormones are balanced, your body kind of is in this sense of harmony, and it's can be reflected in higher energy levels, confidence. Hormonal balance really enhances physical vitality and sensuality, and making you feel more connected to yourself and your body. And I think part of that empowerment comes from the knowledge that I've gained something back that's like essential to my health, and a reminder that our bodies are capable of so much more when we treat it with care. And when I got my cycle back, I felt like I could experience these aspects of my life more fully, being creative, working out, being connected with my partner, and or just being able to relax without this, sense of anxiety that's overshadowing me. And it's not just this cycle. Having a cycle is not just about like the biological function. It's a reflection of balance, and I think when we feel that balance, we're more equipped to handle everything in life, but also more specifically in bodybuilding.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I think that one of the things that I love that you touched on when you were explaining just how it made you feel more empowered and made you feel more feminine was that you used the word harmony. And we touched on that when we first kind of introduced the call. And it's just crazy how you can feel very out of body when things aren't working asynchronously, right? You feel very out of harmony. And then when it all starts working together, it's like this beautiful masterpiece, right? It's like, I don't know if you've ever been in a there actually used to be one at the car dealership and like the little kids play place, and you would drop a marble in, and the marble would like go down a chute, and then it would turn a little wheel and go down that wheel and down the ladder, and it would like turn on a light bulb at the end, right? This is very much how our bodies are supposed to work. It's a system of checks and balances. And it's a very frustrating thing when you are aware that your body is out of balance. Listeners, I'm not sure if you've heard this one before, but your cycle is oftentimes known as the fifth vital sign. Your cycle actually reflects your overall functioning. So things like regularity, length, symptoms of your menstrual cycle, these are all influenced by many systems in your body: endocrine, immune, metabolic systems. And so when you have a regular cycle, it also means that these other key systems are functioning well. And if you've got irregularities, conversely, it's a sign of underlying issues, right? Stress, poor diet, PCOS, hypothyroidism. So, point blank, we all need a cycle. But maybe some of you are already there and you're listening to this podcast and we're 10 minutes in now and you're still feeling the same degree of frustration that you did 10 minutes ago. So, if you're ready, we're going to discuss the two key components of regaining a cycle, your diet and your mindset. So, Alexa, let's start with the role that food plays. Could you share your experience there?
Ooh, okay. Yeah, this is very important. And it's also, I think, probably one of the hardest parts in overcoming this aspect. And now I believe that food is foundational in us regaining a cycle. And the way we nourish our bodies directly influences our hormonal health. And making these changes played a huge role in my journey. And I think specifically what we did with me in terms of food was, we experimented with seed cycling, where we would incorporate specific seeds during different phases of the cycle or month if you're not menstruating. For example, we did flax seeds and pumpkin seeds, which are really good during your follicular phase, and because they support estrogen production. And sesame and sunflower seeds are good during the luteal phase to aid in progesterone production. And this practice was small, but really impactful for me because I was actively fixing my hormones in a natural way, and it also helped me to incorporate more variety in food and especially fat sources in my diet. And I think food can be a little bit of a touchy topic in terms of amenorrhea, especially for those who have it as a result of eating disorders or overtraining and under eating. And I think it's something that people avoid really talking about only because it's a little bit of a touchy topic, but it's truly just, it's so important in, making sure you're eating adequate and nurturing your body. And especially if you're a bodybuilder or even just someone like a runner, you if as a female, we have to be able to nourish ourselves and eat nutrient dense foods with micronutrients and making sure we're eating enough protein and carbs and fats, which are really, really important and something we
I
specifically.
was just about to say, when you mentioned runners there, not to cut you off, but I see this a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot. And I have friends, Pilates instructors, running friends that are in run club with me, and they're dealing with amenorrhea. And the first thing that comes up is, well, are you eating enough food? Are you getting enough calories? And they will recount their day, and they are getting enough volume. But make no mistake, volume does not always equate to calories. If you're filling your diet with roughage, here's the irony. You're probably actually getting too much fiber. You know what fiber does? It's great for someone dealing with estrogen dominance because it attracts the estrogen to the fiber, and then you poop out the excess estrogen. But for someone who has low estrogen, it's actually preventing you. These heavy, dense salads and berries and things like that are preventing you from getting a cycle. So, Alexa, for you, was it eating more carbs? Was it eating more fats? Was it eating more veggies, more protein? What changed for you in order to regain the cycle in terms of your diet?
So for me, I had to just eat more food, period. Like that was the end of story. Under eating, it kept me in this cycle of stress and deprivation and increasing my intake, especially carbs and healthy fats, was a game changer for me. And I think something that we can note here about carbs specifically is it supports your hypothalamic function. So the hypothalamus, the part of the brain which is responsible for regulating hormones, is sensitive to energy availability. If you're on a low carb diet, it can signal energy scarcity to the hypothalamus, which leads to suppressed GnRH production. And GnRH is essential for stimulating the hormones LH and FSH, which triggers ovulation. And additionally to that, cortisol and stress regulation, that also comes with eating more carbs. Carbs help modulate cortisol, which is a stress hormone. And chronically elevated cortisol due to low carb intake or insufficient calories can inhibit reproductive hormone production. Including adequate carbs can stabilize your blood sugar. It can reduce stress signals, which is responsible for disrupting your cycle. And another thing is, thyroid hormone support. Carbohydrates are necessary for proper thyroid function because they aid in the conversion of inactive T4 to active T3 thyroid hormone. And healthy thyroid activity is essential for ovulation and just overall hormonal health. And then insulin sensitivity is positively influenced by balanced carbohydrate intake. Proper insulin function supports ovarian health and the production of estrogen and progesterone, which are key hormones for a regular cycle. And
For sure. I it's funny, we just went through a list here, right? Of people think, oh, I'm going to, like I'm eating carbs in order to balance out my macros, or in order to eat more calories, right? I'm gonna put a piece of bread with this meal. But it's really key, and I want our listeners to hear that we just went over four different reasons why having carbs, it's more than just a piece of bread. It supports that hypothalamic function. It controls cortisol. It helps modulate the conversion of an inactive form of thyroid hormone into the active form of thyroid hormone T3. The number one reason when I see women who have secondary hypothyroidism, or not clinical but subclinical hypothyroidism, generally speaking, they're under eating carbs. And then insulin's role. And then we also can't forget about fats. Increasing healthy fats for you had a huge impact on your hormonal health. Hormones in general are built and derived from fats. So we began incorporating things like avocados, nuts, seeds, fatty fish, coconut oil, olive oil. And these are also the very things that help you to absorb fat-soluble vitamins. So cholesterol, right? Cholesterol is how our bodies actually derive sex hormones. So you've got to have fats in the diet. Without adequate fat intake, your body can't even produce these hormones efficiently. Omega-3 fatty acids, that was something that we put you on nearly immediately. We were getting this from fatty fish, like wild-caught salmon, things like halibut, but also from a high-potency omega-3. Omega-3s, they reduce inflammation, they support your cell membrane integrity. This is all so key for hormone receptor function. When I get on calls with people and I'm discussing kind of like the analogy here, why we don't want inflammation in the body when we are trying to get a cycle back is because what hormones are messengers. And if the cell in and of itself is inflamed, it's like the message literally reverberates off of the cell. It can't get in. Then we have the regulation of estrogen and progesterone that is provided for by healthy fats. Adequate fat intakes actually promotes this balance of estrogen and progesterone. And this it alone will prevent having estrogen dominance or luteal phase defects. And then energy density, right? Fats are energy dense. And so when you're consuming adequate amounts of fats, it's likely that you're also getting sufficient caloric intake to prioritize these reproductive functions. When energy is restricted, and usually we're restricting in the form of fats because fats don't necessarily contribute much from like a visual standpoint to our meals. The body, one of the primary functions, if you will, that the body is going to first allow to slip, or the one of the first functions that the body is going to poo-poo is reproductive function. It's going to suppress ovulation. Number one, it doesn't sense that it's in a place to be, it's not safe. It knows it's not safe. Number two, it knows it's not getting the things that it needs in order to actually hold and carry a baby. And having a normal cycle, carrying a baby, that's not a function, a bodily function that we need to live. We need to breathe, we need to poop, we need to chew. These are things that our body is going to preference over a cycle. So, really key for you, just kind of summing this topic right here up for our listeners, really key is carbs, really key is fats. So, you know,
I think
as
something, sorry, I just
you're
something that you
good.
actually had said earlier that I thought would be really important to touch on is the concept of carbs and fats with where people have little knowledge of like their true benefit. You know, we see a lot of like gym bro culture where it's like eat your carbs and your fats and your proteins and you'll be good. But like we never learned what the benefits are of eating those fats and what the benefits are of eating the carbs, especially for females, and how that impacts our hormonal health. So the list that both of us just gave of all the benefits, I think, is enough to provide evidence into how important eating carbs and fats really are. I mean, like you may see like a piece of bread and be like, ah, I don't need it. Like, it's okay. I don't really need carbs today. Like, I didn't really do much. But I think we neglect the fact that it's just beyond a source of energy. It's literally essential for all these different, internal functions to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that because we're going to talk here in a second, just on the shifts that some of us, that we had to make. And that is certainly one of the shifts that I had to make myself was actually understanding. It was so impactful for me on my journey to regaining my cycle to really understand how I was using food as medicine and not just using food to hit a calorie target. This goes so far beyond when you go into a doctor and they say, well, you're just under eating, you just need to eat more. This is that, but this is also so much more. Now, it's tough. It's really freaking tough to get over that hump. So I want to provide for listeners some advice, some insight here as to what you and I both did to get over needing to eat more. For me, it was really helpful to stay rooted in wanting a family. You know, I had to learn that no food is bad. I had to learn how to incorporate diverse food. And that really helped me to reduce the stress that I put on myself and give my body the variety that it needed. I started to make sure that I was going out on dates. I remember like enjoying being with people. I remember really focusing on long term, like what this meant for myself. And I was like, this is going to help me, you know, one day to procreate. I want to have kids. And so really staying rooted in that purpose helped me during those moments where it was a little bit tougher to incorporate foods that maybe I didn't see value in having, because I was like, what is a tablespoon of coconut oil really going to do for this meal? Well, it's going to help me to have a kid someday.
I think for me, I losing my cycle and in the same way, also just my perspective on food was I was just looking at it as, meeting a target or just these numbers or just this percentage of distribution between carbs, fats, and proteins, and that was all it was. It didn't matter how what it came from. It didn't matter if some days I didn't eat it or I didn't really see the value in, what olive oil did or what these nuts did or what adding avocado did to my meals or, also like proper amount of rice versus just strictly staying to veggies or just not eating adequate amounts of rice in general. And for me, losing my cycle during prep was, and also just having irregular cycles in the past due to PCOS. I just was scared because I'm so young, losing my cycle at 21, and obviously having a family is definitely in my future, but I think more so it was more like I should be at my prime health right now and not. And I think that was a really mental thing that I had to deal with and be like, okay, well, I really need to pay attention to what I'm eating and the sources that I'm eating and making sure I'm eating adequate fats and carbs. And I like how you want to have a family and how you're rooted in that. I was also similarly rooted in that, but more so like looking at deeper into the future for me. And also, I was also going on dates. I have a boyfriend and we've been together for 5 years. And that's definitely a conversation we've had where we want to for sure have a family. And it's been essential to make that sort of mindset shift in terms of just wanting to eat more and accepting that sort of weight gain. And I think that's something really important as well that we did is we really, really amped up the food. And I'm eating a lot of food now and I changed my perspective on it completely from hitting this target to, oh, what are these sources that I'm incorporating in dinner tonight and how can I make this as beneficial for me as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think weight gain in any way, shape, or form is generally going to be a byproduct of this. I think for you in particular, it was tough because we were also coming out of a contest prep, right? It wasn't for me, I was far removed from a contest prep. For you had just seen your body in a very unrealistic state. And weight gain was going to be part of this process regardless. Now, again, it's hard emotionally for us as women, I think, to gain weight, but it's really necessary, particularly in most cases when we're dealing with amenorrhea. I think it's important for listeners to think of it as you're building reserves that your body needs to feel safe enough to ovulate. You know, it was important for me as I was going through this process, not just eating more, but also as I was internalizing the shift in the scale to some degree, to not look at that number with guilt or any sort of like disdain, and instead to regard it as like I'm creating a safe habitus for my body. Now, even more than that, on another tangent, Alexa, something that we haven't really talked about here is training. How did you start to see your workouts differently? Maybe not necessarily we talked about this as a way to burn calories, but instead as a way to support your health.
So I think I remember this actually. I think it was maybe a month or two into my reverse, and when we were figuring out a training method, or I had expressed some sort of concern about fatigue and just not feeling mentally in it. And I'm sure that was also tied to my lack of hormones, but we started pulling back on training. And that doesn't really mean that we stopped. It just, we shifted perspectives and we were, Maddie told me we have to nourish my body and not punish it. Why do I want to show up to the gym if I'm not enjoying it? Why do I want to push myself to failure if I don't feel like, if I literally don't have the energy to do it? So we added in different things like yoga and Pilates, or even just upping my step count and walking. And I started finding joy in working out once we did those things, because my perspective shifted from something of punishment or calories burned, where that was sort of the mindset in prep. Not that I was being punished, but you know, it's a mindset shift. When you're in prep, you work methodically, and I wasn't having fun in the gym. It was just more like a, I had to check it off. It was just a box to tick. And when I'm not in that headspace anymore, and there's not like a goal or a purpose in me having this sort of mindset, it was really essential that I had to make a switch. So I focused on movements that I thought were fun or something I really just found enjoyment with. Like for me, it was walking more, spin classes, and a lot of yoga. So we shifted this a lot, you know. Training 4 times a week now. I do yoga twice. I do a spin class once a week. And sometimes I will go try another class out. And although I've regained my cycle back, it's also just been like mentally relieving to get out of that headspace that was associated with that, you know, robotic functioning. And just it wasn't sustainable for me long term. And I think that also correlates with my hormonal health at that time.
Yeah, I think for me too, I think for a lot of us bodybuilders, something we can probably all connect on is the fact that, like, when we're in the gym, I get so competitive with myself. Like, I'm like, I gotta do more reps, I gotta lift more weight. And like, I recognize that that's probably not going to shift for me, like, ever. So I have literally limited myself to training in the gym 3 days a week. I do back. I do shoulders and then I do a lower body day and I do Pilates twice a week and I go to run club once a week and then I take one full rest day. To be honest with you, I'm probably more active than I was. Like, as crazy as that sounds, but I'm not active in the sense of burning calories. And I think something that really characterizes my activity and my modalities of exercise now is the word play. The word play and fun comes to mind. You know, play and joy, they're huge for reducing stress and making time for laughter, hobbies, and even connection, you know, as kind of a subcategory of play. I don't even really see my movement in my gym anymore as I don't see anything that I do in terms of training my body as a checkbox item. It's all play for me. You know, stress is a cycle killer, and joy is the secret weapon for that. I think it's really, really important that we're creating space and for play, for fun things. And we're also working with somebody who can help us let go of the control that we try to grip so tightly on when it comes to letting go of the gym. I remember that was such a tough thing for me to wrap my head around. And just the shifts that I had to go through when I was regaining a cycle.
Yeah, so when you were doing that, when you were working towards regaining your cycle, did you struggle with that body image, or you know, like thinking it was gonna get out of control, or how did that go for you?
I definitely did struggle with my body image, and I think I've seen, unfortunately, you know, a lot of our I need to back up. I'm very fortunate that I had to go through those struggles myself, because I feel like as a result, it helps me to truly like be one with my athletes like you who are going through the same thing. And I know that there's probably women that are listening to this podcast that are fearful of what it means to regain a cycle, and they have all the tools, or they think they have the tools, but they're really afraid to take that next step. And I just want to encourage the women that are listening to this podcast to see this journey as a scary step, but a step forward and not a step back.
Yeah.
And if I could, I jotted down a few things that I would just like to share for those women that are listening to this and they're just scared about gaining weight. They're scared going through the same things, honestly, that I did. And as I had gone through this journey and also reflected on my own experience and feelings, I just wish that somebody would have told me these things.
Yeah.
So, number one, I want other women to know too that it's okay to acknowledge it and to just don't run from it. I understand how scary the thought of weight gain can feel, especially in a society that equates thinness with health and worth.
Yeah.
So take a moment to acknowledge your fear of gaining weight. It is valid. Like, don't try to dismiss it. Don't try to be like, yeah, but I'm not scared. You're scared. I was scared too. It's okay.
I was
Number
scared.
two, right. We're all scared. We're all scared to gain a
Yeah.
little bit of healthy weight. Number two, reframe the gain, right? Weight gain does not always mean that something is going wrong. In fact, it is oftentimes a sign that your body is starting to feel safe again. And this is a key step in restoring balance and function. So you could think of it as your body's way of saying, I finally have the resources I need to heal. It's not moving backward, it's laying a foundation for long-term wellness. I remember looking down at my stomach and it being like pressed up against the seatbelt and seeing it like not hang over, but yeah, there was a pooch there.
Yeah.
And I had to correct myself. And I do this a lot because I'm human. And I was like, if one of my athletes looked down and said something unkind to themselves, I would smack them silly. And I had to stop for a moment and reframe for a second what that meant and actually acknowledge that this is something that I was working towards. I actually wanted
Yeah.
this and I had it. And now that I had it, it was like my mind immediately almost went to a place of like roboticism, which is like, oh, that's bad, but not in the context of what I wanted. Number three, our body needs energy and nutrients to repair itself. If it has been stressed or in a deprived state, whether from dieting, overtraining, or life stressors, weight gain is a way to replenish those reserves. Think about a prep, right? When we have been in a place where we have been chronically dieting or chronically stressed, we've got to replenish our reserves. Our reserves are on empty at that point. Number four, when your body gets what it needs, processes like your menstrual cycle, digestion, energy levels, and sleep, they're all going to improve. So sometimes it really, really helps. I know, especially for a lot of my athletes that are very data driven, this is why our check-ins look like they do. It can really help to connect weight gain to tangible health outcomes. And this
Yeah.
really helps us to see a bigger picture of our healing journey. I know for myself, not just seeing the number on the scale and reporting that, but also my coaches checking in and my doctors checking in on, how was I sleeping now? Where was my libido at now? And looking at these markers. My family was making comments about, oh, we have our funny, lively Maddie back. And that meant the world. For other, for other women, another thing that I had written down is sometimes I'll tell our athletes to think of our bodies like a bank account. When you've been withdrawing energy for too long, weight gain is like making deposits back into a bank account that's gone into the negatives. You're rebuilding a savings account so your body can thrive again. And in many ways, healing is like building a house. You've got to have a solid foundation before you can add the details. And the foundation might involve a few extra pounds now to create a balance later. And I definitely can speak on this and how I actually had gained probably a little bit more than what I comfortably felt I needed to gain, got my cycle back, and now my weight is coming back down. So sometimes you do have to gain a little bit more than probably what you would ideally want, which leads me to my sixth point. The weight gain, you gain now is not permanent. It's part of a process. And once your body feels safe and balanced, it's much easier at that point to fine-tune things. Studies actually show that weight gain during healing is often temporary and redistribute as your metabolism resets and your hormones regulate. So it's really important to also recognize that this is not a forever thing. And then I also encourage tracking progress in ways that aren't tied to weight. You know, like I said, visiting things like energy levels. What about your training? Are you enjoying your training now? Are you sleeping better? These are all signs that we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think something that you said that I thought was really important is it's weird how like subconsciously we actually want to get there in terms of weight gain. Like our body wants to get there. We're biologically disposed to doing that. Like we want to get to a healthy spot so that we are able to reproduce and things like that. And I think it can be like a mind block because you want to get there, but you don't want to take the steps to get there, or you're afraid of the steps to get there, or you're afraid with the waking that's paired with being in the spot that comes with you being your healthiest, which is just a concept that is so common and something that we've both experienced. And I know also for me, I was really rigid and I liked being very structured with my training and my food and everything. And for other clients or women who are perfectionists with this sort of thing, you know, diet and training, how would you encourage them to embrace flexibility like you did with me and keep, while they can still have that sort of sense of control, you know?
Oh yeah, because I once again I dealt with this exact same thing. It was like I was obsessed with the routine, the monotony.
Yeah,
I was
me
so
too.
scared to break away. I mean, at that point, I honestly think that I could handle a few extra pounds. What I couldn't handle was letting go of my control. So for me personally, as a perfectionists equate flexibility with failure. So it was so important for me to start to work at reframing perfectionism as a skill to reinforce my sense of control. If I could perceive it as a skill, I still felt in control, right? So, an example of this, flexibility doesn't mean letting go of your goals. It means adapting in a way that serves your body and mind better, right? Same thing, implementing structured flexibility was reassuring for me as well. I needed to know that I wasn't abandoning a plan. I think sometimes when we allow for a plan to be flexible, i.e., we give you know, we started integrating yoga, we started integrating Pilates. It was still part of your plan. I didn't just all of a sudden say, go to a few workout classes and skip your training.
We
And
had
this is
that.
exactly. So I think for people who are perfectionists, it really helps to still have a plan. I had a client who got a breast augmentation, and I still had a literally it was a training program in there for her. It had no training in it, like no actual physical training when she was immediately out of surgery, but it was still a plan for her to follow. So I typically will say, let's build in some intentional flexibility. Same thing with, just allowing for analogies. I think sometimes we get so for I'm an analogy girl. If anyone listening to this call doesn't understand that, I am big with analogies, but I think sometimes it helps us to see to zoom out and not take things so personally. Because analogies, what they do is they help concepts to be more relatable. They help for concepts, it helps us to reduce anxiety about things, and particularly about being off track or off of what we're used to in terms of a plan. A flexible plan is like having a GPS. It adjusts when detours happen, but it still gets you to your destination. And I think that that is key. When you're thinking about being flexible in this season and knowing that you may have to pull back in some areas. And then, I think it's also really, really important to highlight the cost of perfectionism. I think a lot of us don't see fault in that. And I don't want anyone to see fault in being a perfectionist because, in so many ways, I know it serves me in my career. But rigidity can really harm our results. You know, being rigid might give you a sense of control now, but it may mean not regaining a cycle, you know? So it comes at a cost. And I really, really, really wish that in terms of regaining a cycle, it was just a matter of letting go of perfectionism, maybe eating a little bit more, maybe training a little bit differently. And for some it is, but we don't all get that lucky. I certainly didn't. It definitely took a village, and it took pulling resources from all over. I'm here today. I'm happy and I'm proud to share with you that I've everything that I know and all that I found to really help me. And I truly believe that you, as our listeners, can get there too.
I think something that you had said that we also discussed in the last episode was how perfectionists love structure. And I think that's both me and you. And this was definitely something major for me. And I know you said we had changed my structure and added in yoga and sort of this flexible way of training, but it was still like in a routine or like it was regimented. And that goes back to what we said last week or 2 weeks ago, which was, you can have a structure and you can be flexible, and you can, if you're really set on being this regimented routine person, that doesn't, you don't have to not have that routine. You know, it could just change, which is what happened for me. I'm a big perfectionist and I was super scared of not being in a routine. And I think some of it was a little bit me convincing myself and gaslighting myself into believing that I really did thrive on structure. And I think that was true for prep, but I think outside of that, I didn't really feel strongly about that belief. But I think once I realized that, okay, I could still have a structure, I could still have a routine, but I can just adjust it, I think that sort of eased that part of me that intends on being perfectionist and checking off all these boxes and making sure all these things are done, or that I have something to like look forward to instead of just going day by day, just through the motions and not really knowing what to do. I think that was a really huge step in making me adjusted to this sort of flexible training, flexible lifestyle sort of thing, was creating the structure, but with le like changing it from what it was before, and it was less structured than before. And
Yeah, and I think as we're talking about this, I'm starting to get not PTSD is not the right word. I'm starting to have flashbacks, good
yeah, I was just gonna say
flashbacks.
flashbacks.
But yes, flashbacks. From something that I also don't want to let slip under the rug, and that is I think there is this moment of awakening, right? When we actually see the data. Right? Something that really can help in this process. We talked earlier about how I really anchored myself into wanting a family. Well, another thing that also helped me, and I think you would even argue helped you, was looking at your Dutch test, looking
Oh my
at
God. For sure.
data.
I think something like the Dutch test or the basal body temperature tracking, like things like that, those tests, and even something that we just did recently with me, the GI map, I think those are all really important indicators in that sort of thing. And for women who don't have a cycle yet, and who are in a spot like me, how would you recommend they approach these tools, or how can these provide value and insight for them?
Well, they definitely can, first of all. I think that functional medicine, especially in this space, when it comes to regaining a cycle, has tremendous value. I personally would highly encourage functional testing. So, with the Dutch cycle map and basal body temperature tracking, we can get a lot of really valuable data. So for those of our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with this, Dutch cycle mapping tracks hormone patterns to identify imbalances like low estrogen, high cortisol, or even insufficient progesterone. So for women who are having who aren't having regular cycles or who haven't had three, right? They're diagnosed with that secondary hypothalamic amenorrhea. There's no point in doing a Dutch complete. What you really want to do at this point is a Dutch cycle map, which looks at your hormones through a span of 33 days to see if you're ovulating and what patterns your hormones look like. If it's within budget, I always encourage a 4-point cortisol add-on since we've already discussed stress can really play a role here. Then there's basal body temperature tracking. So even if you're not ovulating, tracking your BBT, which is the abbreviation for basal body temperature, provides insights into hormonal trends. So, basal body temperature can tell you ovulation timing. If you have a clear temperature rise, it indicates ovulation's occurred. And tracking ovulation obviously helps you to avoid pregnancy. Cycle lengths and phases. Basal body temperature tracking helps you determine the length of your follicular and luteal phases, which is an indicator of hormonal health, shows us hormonal imbalances. A consistently low luteal phase temperature or a short luteal phase that's less than 10 days signals insufficient progesterone. An erratic BBT temperature or an erratic pattern can show us that we aren't ovulating. This term for it is anovulation. And basal body temperature can also show us if you're pregnant, right? So if it remains elevated for more than 16 days after ovulation, it could indicate pregnancy. So, Alexa, did you try seed cycling or basal body temperature tracking during your journey? And if so, how did it help you feel more connected to your body?
Sorry, I don't have an answer for that.
Oh,
So yeah,
Alexa, I think you're
I
okay. You're
was
good.
muted. So we did do seed cycling, as I mentioned previously. I thought that was really, really positively, I thought that really benefited me in terms of, getting connected to my body. It really helped me hone in on my cycle, even though I didn't have one, but it takes you through the month. You eat according, you cycle these seeds according to the certain times of the month. And it was really important for me to learn my body's patterns, even though it wasn't really there yet. And then something in terms of BBT tracking, which we did in my journey, I have the Oura Ring, which does measure my body temperature. And that was really helpful in me actually being able to pinpoint when I would be ovulating or if a cycle was going to start or how I can anticipate that starting. And it also was it helped us pinpoint any issues I was having, if I had a lack of ovulation, why, how can we address this? And it was really helpful for me to use these two tools into regaining a cycle and also just being able to learn my body a bit more and looking at this sort of additional data on top of things like the Dutch test was really important for me. And
I think too, when I started doing these things, it definitely made me feel like I was being proactive in my approach and in my journey. And there's something to be said like about that sense of proactivity and just how it can make you feel. For our listeners that didn't fully understand. I know that Alexa talked about seed cycling, but I want to make sure that if you are working to regain a cycle, you know exactly how to use these seeds and how that works. So, seed cycling, Alexa did touch on, it's the practice of eating specific seeds during the two main phases of your menstrual cycle. So, you've got your follicular phase, which is pre-ovulation, and then the luteal phase, which is post-ovulation, to support the production and the balance of hormones like estrogen and progesterone. So, we use seeds, flax, pumpkin, sesame, and sunflower seeds to Provide us with nutrients like omega-3 fatty acids, lignin, zinc, selenium, vitamin E. And these things help us to support production, hormone production. So they're the building blocks of hormones like estrogen and progesterone, regulate our hormone metabolism as they aid in detox and proper utilization of hormones, and then balance hormones naturally. So if you don't actually have a cycle, you can seed cycle according to the moon. So if you do have a cycle, then in days 1 through 14, which is a follicular phase, or from the new moon to the full moon, which you can look up online, you would use a tablespoon of flax and a tablespoon of pumpkin seeds. Then in days 15 to 28, which is a luteal phase, if you have a cycle, or from the full moon to the new moon, you would cycle a tablespoon of sunflower and a tablespoon of sesame seeds, respectively. Alexa, did you first start cycling according to the phases of your cycle, or were we cycling for you according to the moon?
So we started seed cycling according to the moon for me, and it really the appeal that I found in seed cycling was it was a way for me to support my hormones through nutrition, but also a way for me to, like you said, be proactive in my approach to regaining my cycle and also just reaching that balance in my hormones. And I think the seed cycling is really, really important for other people and our listeners to do or to, join, get a coach to coach you through this. But especially if you don't have a cycle, since it can be a little confusing without having a cycle, to go according to the new moon and the full moon.
I know it's kind of eerie, right? I remember like looking
It
at the
sounds like scary, like, okay,
woo-woo.
moon and
But
full.
it really does work. Honestly, even for our listeners who do have regular cycles, if you're enjoying this episode and you're dealing with hormonal imbalances, it helps with that too.
Try seed cycling.
It really is great. And I know too, I had referenced or alluded to my village. And I know we've been talking for a while now. I want to share with our listeners a few of the other things that really did help me personally. An acupuncturist. I actually started seeing an acupuncturist one time a week. Honestly, most acupuncture is affordable. My insurance covered it. I think it was like $40 to $50 per treatment. But acupuncture actually helps to regulate your nervous system, which reduces stress, enhance blood flow to your ovaries and uterus, and signal that sense of safety to your body. Side note, I'm actually working to bring my acupuncturist on to our next episode to discuss women's health. So I'm super excited to maybe have a chance to just share her wisdom with everybody. But aside from that, just recapping, one of the big things for me, I think, was the adjustment to my carbs and my fats. Obviously, I did the Dutch testing, I did the seed cycling, I gained a little bit of weight, I started doing seeing my acupuncturist, I was adjusting my foods. Second to that, lowering my fiber. We talked about having too much fiber, which I see this a lot in girls who are saying, "Oh, I eat enough." Well, you're eating enough lettuce, or you're eating enough fibrous foods, but what you're doing is you're actually decreasing the amount of estrogen that your body has free floating in your body, which is causing the elimination of too much estrogen, lowering circulating levels. Alexa, you've actually mentioned supplements before. Were there any that you felt made a noticeable difference for you?
Yeah, so aside from what we had mentioned earlier, where we added omega-3s into my supplement protocol, we also added things like Chase Berry, which was I'm still taking it, and it's really beneficial. I really feel like it helped me a lot get my cycle back because it supports your progesterone production. And then something else that we did was evening primrose oil, which I know maybe some people haven't heard of. I know I didn't hear about it until Maddie had prescribed it to me. But this little pill, it looks like an omega-3 pill.
It
It can
does.
Yeah, it
I
looks
just took
exactly
mine.
like yeah, me too. I took mine before too. It can ease your PMS symptoms and it also supports estrogen balance. And then, like we had talked about, omega-3s, obviously very important for anti-inflammatory purposes and then just essential for hormone synthesis. Something else that we focused on, obviously, was an anti-inflammatory diet. So things like fatty fish, we did turmeric, leafy greens, a lot of berries. I was eating a lot of berries. I'm still eating a lot of berries. And then GI mapping. This is kind of like if you have to, it's not super necessary, but it could be in some cases. And this can identify issues with the gut, which can contribute to hormone imbalances. I know a lot of things begin in the gut. Any issues you have, it's probably in the gut. So GI mapping.
Yeah, Alexa's going through quite a bit of training on that right
Oh
now. So she's
yeah. Oh
thinking about
yeah.
all the things.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, truthfully, we just spent a slew of time on this podcast, and thank you for sharing with listeners what you've been taking. I'm taking the same things, everyone. We just spent a slew of time discussing medical interventions and changes that we both made to regain our cycles, which obviously I feel is necessary to fully share with you, our listeners and friends, how we did it. This podcast, though, is not called The Medical Interventions Behind the Physique. It's called The Psyche Behind the Physique, and that's for good reason. There's a huge mental component to regaining a cycle that no one talks about, or honestly, everyone, myself included, fears. No one's
Yeah.
afraid of supplements. But gaining weight, losing control, and buying new clothes, that is the scary stuff. So, Alexa, what advice would you give to women listening who feel overwhelmed by the idea of changing their diet or lifestyle to support a cycle?
So for one, I stopped viewing this sort of thing as a setback and saw it as a reset, which we had also talked about earlier. I reminded myself that I wasn't losing control. I was gaining health, and just my approach was changing, and my control on things were changing. And I think what I would like to ask you now would be, what do you think would holds women back the most when they try to regain their cycle? I mean, obviously, weight gain is a really big mental challenge for many, and I think that was something that both of us experienced. But how can you help them overcome these blocks, and how can women celebrate these small wins along the way, even if they don't see the immediate results? Oh, you're on mute.
Thanks. I personally found for me that it was about actually taking a moment to celebrate the small wins along the way. I remember turning around one night to get in the shower. This is so embarrassing. And I saw cellulite on my butt.
Oh,
And
I've been.
I immediately felt like I wanted to be sick, but I stopped and I told myself, this is for a literal baby one day. And this is a sign that I'm getting healthy. And even small signs like improved energy is a sign that your body is healing. I remember feeling more alive. I remember feeling more energized, not recognizing that before, despite being super lean, I had far less energy simply because I wasn't eating enough to keep a healthy amount of body fat on a body, and that my body would see that as an internal sign of safety.
Yeah.
I had my fair share of justifying. I'm doing this to regain a cycle moments that I really shouldn't have. And if you're afraid of those, this episode that you and I filmed just 2 weeks ago, Cookies, Cake, and Bergdorf's, might be perfect for you. You don't
Yeah.
have to be perfect to heal. Just take action and messy action at that and trust the process. Alexa, as we're wrapping up here, what would you say to women who are listening and just starting this process?
Yeah, so I think that all women who are listening, just remember that regaining your cycle is more than just your period. It's about reclaiming your health and vitality. And if you're feeling lost and overwhelmed, we can both guide you every step of the way. And I think we have to encourage women to get over that sort of fear of weight gain and seeing cellulite and things like that, because we do have to, something that I think we should encourage is just celebrating those small wins along the way and how that's working towards your goal. For example, you wanting to have a kid one day or wanting to be able to reproduce and have a really strong relationship sexually and emotionally with your partner. Taking these small wins and seeing, okay, a little bit of fat here, a little bit of fat there, a little bit more carbs, a little bit more fats. These things that are more challenging for us to do are really, really essential in us reaching our goals in terms of our health. And for me, I'm 21. I want to be as healthy as possible. I don't want to experience a constant loss of periods because I also do want to have children one day. And I think that's something I have to remind myself, especially in the phase I'm in now, where I'm putting on some weight and I'm going to into the gym and I'm pursuing this muscle growth, but also accepting that I'm gaining some fat, but that it's necessary in order for me to be healthy. And something that I did have to remind myself as I was getting into this point of my life was I want to have hormonal health be really good. I think that was something I really wanted to focus on in my reverse. I really wanted to gain my cycle back. I was so determined. There was one point where I was so apprehensive about gaining weight and I wanted to be regimented. I wanted to be stage lean. I wanted to have abs. And I was like, okay, well, at what cost? Oh, my period. Oh, that's okay. I don't need that. It's okay. I have to buy tampons anyway. That's one less thing I have to do. And when I shifted my mindset into, well, I actually do want to be really internally healthy. I want my body to function the way it's meant to, and I want to treat her with respect. Then I started implementing these sort of things that helped me get there.
Yeah, I think something that you just brought up that I don't want to just gloss over. There's probably girls that are listening to this because I was one of them at one time that hear and don't think they think, oh, well, I'm probably 5 or 6 years out from having a kid. I don't care about having kids, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm obviously older than you. I'm kids are probably a little bit closer in my future than
For
yours.
sure.
That doesn't matter though. I think that what's so important is that even if you don't necessarily care about having kids, even ever, something that Alexa and I hope have conveyed throughout this podcast episode is that this goes far beyond when you don't even realize when you don't have a cycle how you feel so out of touch with your body. You don't
Yes.
realize that you take identity in having a cycle as a female. And what I love and I pray and hope that our listeners have gained from this call is that it's more than just taking supplements. It's more than just blindly following a medical practitioner or a coach who's going to put you on a meal plan and tell you what foods to eat. It's about understanding the science behind foods and being bought into the process. It's more than just seed cycling. It's more than just diversifying your training. It's actually about inviting fun and play into your life. And I really, really hope that this episode gets conveyed in the light that you and I have, the vision that we had for this, to help other women to understand that even though this can be really trying and really tough on our mental well-being, it is so worth it.
And something like you said, just really quickly before we wrap up, is also not blindly following something a doctor telling you to get on birth control and that this would fix your issues. And I know we touched on this earlier, but I'm walking evidence of this. I was told this when I was 13. I had irregular cycles. I was told to go on birth control and that would fix me.
I was
And
12.
lo and behold, I got my period regularly, but I didn't understand that that wasn't a real period. And for 7 years, I was having what I thought were cycles, but they actually just turned out to be the pill telling my body to shed its lining. And that in realistically, my internal hormonal health was still a wreck. And I think that's something also to encourage is maybe if you are experiencing a loss of period and you believe that, or you were told that getting on birth control would be beneficial or would fix your loss of cycle, that maybe you should look at other avenues and look at health more holistically and look into your food and nutrition because I think those are way more important and foundational in getting your cycle back.
That and certainly, even some of the measures that we took, where even we talked about like for a while your BBT was not really changing, right? But it was a way for you to understand your body. Women can have a bleed and still not ovulate, which is why natural cycles and tracking basal body temperature, whether through natural cycles or not, is extremely eye-opening and informative.
And there's many women who honestly probably don't even know the different cycles or like the different periods of your cycle, the follicular phase, the different phases. There's many women who actually don't even know that. So I actually encourage many women who are listening who may not understand these things that maybe if you are experiencing amenorrhea like I did and you were tracking your temperature, and even though nothing really changed, it's more data. It helps you understand your body better, and it can also help you where in the future, where your cycle does return or these things sort of level out and you return to balance, you can understand why and how that happened or what changed in that period of time.
For sure. Awesome. Awesome. Well, listeners, thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Psyche Behind the Physique. If you found today's conversation helpful, please share it with a friend or leave a review. I love hearing how these topics resonate with you all. And as always, I will be back in 2 weeks with more insights, stories, and actionable advice to help keep you moving forward on your health journey. Remember, trust your body. It is working with you, not against you. The more you support it, the more it will support you back. If you are interested in working with our team one-on-one, we would love to welcome you into our community. You can click the link in our description to be contacted for a one-on-one discovery call, or head over to my Instagram page at Mads Michie Fitness or Alexa's at Alexa Fit, and we can discuss how our team might approach working with you on your customized journey to living well. Be kind to one another this week, and don't forget to include yourself in that mix. This is Maddie Michelson and Alexis Soter signing off, and we will see you real soon, friends.
Bye bye.